Love Hope Radio.
I'll turn your speakers off.
Got it.
Heavenly mothers crying, these children are dying at the hands of the other child. I know her heart is breaking, I feel the earth is shaking, but rivers flow from the tears she cries. She cries, she cries, Rachel's weeping for her children.
Hello, welcome to Heart Talk Radio with Miss E. And no, this is not Evelyn with a very bad cold. My name is Dan Smith, and I'm a very good friend of Miss E. And tonight we decided to rearrange the furniture a little bit, and we're going to put Miss E, along with her good friend Evelyn D, in the interviewee chair, and I am going to sit in the chair and do the interview. So tonight we have a very, very special program. We are going to talk with Miss E about her new book, Entertaining Angels Aware, I Am My Sister's Keeper. Evelyn, are you there? Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right. I didn't hear anything when the music stopped. This is my first time at the controls. I got a little bit nervous, just wanted to check. So let me... Now I feel a little, my heart's starting to slow down a little bit. I feel a little bit better. I want to give a little bit of background about us and about where I met you and what I have, what that experience has been like. I, believe it or not, I have only known Evelyn for about 6 years, but it's been an absolutely incredible 6 years. Almost immediately after meeting Evelyn, I realized what a special, very, very special, caring, loving person she was, and decided to get more involved with what she does. And we became very close, and so close, in fact, that we had to sort of define this relationship. And so we decided to become unofficially adopted brother and sister. We've kind of been that way ever since. And when I adopted Evelyn, I found out that it was a two-for-one package. Along with Evelyn came her beautiful sister, Kim, and the beautiful relationship that the two of them have together. And it's just extremely special. I remember the night that I met Kim. I was going to do something with Evelyn the next day. We were at a restaurant. It was late. We were very hungry. We were in a hurry. I gave Evelyn a hug at the end of it as we were about to go our separate ways until the next morning. And as I walked away, I heard Evelyn call my name, and I turned around, and there was her sister Kim with her arms open wide saying, "What about me?" She wanted a hug too. And I just thought that was so special, and the two of them have been a package deal in my life ever since. And just watching and observing and witnessing the two of them, how they interact, how they grow together, how they support each other, all the things that Evelyn does, Kim is right there. And everything that Kim does, Evelyn is right there. So I'm honored tonight to have been asked to be on this call and to facilitate this call and to interview Evelyn in about her new book, along with Evelyn D. It's going to be confusing. We have two Evelyns on the line, but we'll get through it. And to about the book, why she wrote it, how it came about, why she invited other people to participate in it, and what effect that's had on their lives. So, Evelyn, how are you tonight?
I am doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. My nervousness is starting to wane a little bit. And no, actually, I'm doing fine.
I'm never nervous about anything. I wouldn't have asked you to do it if I didn't feel totally confident. I just really appreciate your work and your ability to maybe just extract information and just create a whole new awareness of it. And you've done that with me in many instances, and both professionally and personally. And I just appreciate your way that you see things different and help others to understand. So sometimes you're helping me to see things, and I felt there was no better person than you to share this story, which is so very dear to my heart, with the rest of the world.
Well, I really appreciate that. And the thing I think that maybe makes me just a touch nervous, and I was more kidding than I was serious, but there was a little hint of seriousness in that, is this subject is so important, and it's like a discovery that most of us don't make. You know, we just pass by. We see these situations, but we don't acknowledge them. We unless we're involved with a special needs person, we really don't have a clue, most of us. And what you're doing and what you're doing with your book and, you know, what I learned from reading your book, it really flipped me around, because it was about sisters like any two sisters in many ways, and it wasn't in many aspects what I anticipated. You were honest. You did talk about the good, and you have the chapter Halo Off, where you talk about, you know, some of the struggles and the difficulties. But for the most part, it was intriguing to me to see how much you were the same as, and I don't even want to say that, because to say the same sounds like not an elevated enough term, but you love each other at a different level, but the interaction was very similar to any two sisters.
Okay. And since she's my only sister, I have nothing to compare it to.
You know what, that's an interesting observation. And you did, you know, you waited for her for a long time. You anticipated her. You couldn't wait for her to be born. And you're right, you do only have one. But I have three sisters and I have a brother. And I got to tell you, I was envious of the relationship as I read your book.
Oh, wow.
Truly, truly. There's such a high level of love, respect, and the two of you are so in tune to each other. You're so aware of each other, more so than I could ever imagine being with my brother or my sisters.
Wow. And that was part of the reason I wanted to write the book, besides the fact that she was so excited when I wrote my first book. I told her I was going to write a book about her, because it had crossed my mind. And so she was so excited about that, I had to follow through with it. But I feel that the connection that we have is so extraordinary, and more on a spiritual basis most of the time. I just felt like I had to share that with people, because when someone looks at her and just sees the disability, and it's amazing to me when people are new around her and they see just how, you know, improved she is to some aspects of life, it's just really amazing. And that's why I wanted to share the story because she is an amazing being.
It's, you said in tune with, I would even use the term insightful. Sometimes she says things that are just amazing to me. And I'm amazed, not just that she caught them, that anyone caught them. And in your book, the thing that struck me right in the introduction is when you write about when you were writing your book and you attended monthly critique groups and Kim would come to you and then she was beaming with a burst of delight and she said, "I'm very, very happy." And you asked her why. And what did she say?
She said, "Kim in your book."
Kim in your book.
Kim in your book.
And she, and that's a level of understanding that most of us would probably, weren't in a situation, would assume that she would not have. And I think that, you know, when I knowing the two of you for so long, I really think that the way that you have been with her and the way that you have treated her, the same as every other person, and you provided opportunities for her to grow, and she responded. Would you agree with that? Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I think it's fair, and I think it's because I recognize something more in her, and it's interesting because she's lived with me now for the past 13 years. Our mother was extremely protective of her in terms of allowing her to learn different things and be more independent, and I think she would possibly be more independent, which is a scary thought at this point, if she had been with me like during the years, because when I was in a young adult, it's when she was really, you know, coming into herself as a young adult herself, and I think it would have been slightly different. But I think from the very beginning, you know, when I talk about sweet little angel eyes, when I first looked at her, there was just a connection there. And I've not had this with anyone else, maybe one person similar, but I think even being a person that socialized to be or act or talk or think a certain way, we probably put limitations on it. But I think with Kim and I, it just flows. And so that, I think that has always been there. There's just been this soul connection ever since she was came into the world. Like I said, when I first saw her and she was in the incubator, she opened her eyes, and everyone argued that that baby did not open her eyes. I know, and I knew, and I still know that she did. And I think that was just our connection.
You said, you know, you mentioned limitations. Do you think that some people who have a special needs child or a special needs sibling are more responding to the description that's given from the outside from the so-called, quote-unquote, professionals than they are just behaving naturally? I think there was something very natural about your behavior, and it was so strong that the outside influence didn't come into the situation.
Yeah, again, I think it was that inner knowing. And just even from the other authors who contributed to the book, for the majority of them, I think most of them had a sense of knowing as well. I think probably, one, the larger the family is, and I think probably there's also, probably, and I could be wrong, and any of our listeners can sort of tag in on this, that I think there's probably one person in the family that probably has a stronger connection with that sibling or child than the other. And I think it's about that inner knowing. But I think when you get to know them, just in general, it's always because, well, that's just who they are. I think people just become to know who they are. And I think that was common in most of the contributing artists' statements, that other people just know them as who they are. But it also depends also on the level of their disability, or the diagnosis, because Tim's diagnosis is Down syndrome, and not all of the people who contributed are siblings, do their siblings have that particular disability. But I believe if we all slow down long enough, when you spend enough time one-on-one with that individual, I think just the divinity is what I would call it, of that soul comes through. I believe that what they're taking in, we may not be aware of, but when you start to feel that interaction and that relationship building, you know that there's an understanding beyond. They're just not able to express it.
I think you're on to something. At your book signing, when several of the authors were there, as I was listening to each of them speak, they spoke about the person in detail. And just to the extent of clarification only, mentioned the condition. And so what I'm hearing and what I think you all have in common is you see the person and have, because you can see the person, perhaps you have the patience to let things develop at a different pace or in a different way, but the thing you had in common is you all had faith and believed that the development was there. And I saw it as every single one of them as a person-to-person relationship, I would say as equals, but different, and not as much a caregiver to care receiver type relationship. Even though that was a significant, you have to acknowledge that is a significant part of it, but it's not.
Yeah.
The primary part of it.
Exactly. And I missed you for a beat there because I stopped to take in the call from my other guest, and rather than him calling in, I'm just going to have him to join on my line, so if you can't hang up. You're on the air, Mr. Mike.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Evelyn.
No problem. Don't be sorry. Keep going, Dan.
Yes. Is this Mr. Mike Pritchard on the line? Oh, wow.
It is.
How are you?
Let me
tell the guests who you are, and I'm glad to have you on the line. Mike is someone who I met before I met. And to explain that is that Evelyn talks so much about him that I felt like I knew him for a long time, and I actually met him accidentally, and I don't know if you remember this, Mike. We were both in Las Vegas, and I was teaching a class for a group that you were speaking to on a Saturday night, and mid-afternoon they said, when you're done with your class, we would change the format, and we'd like to have two speakers. And I said, sure, I'll speak. And I said, how much time do I have? They said, enough time to run to your room and change your clothes, but not enough time to take a shower. And I got up and I spoke, and then I was followed by you. And I'm sure glad it wasn't the other way around. And this is what I want the audience to know about you. Many of their kids and their grandkids may know you by the voices you do, for the characters you do, or you may have visited their school and talked to them. And when you spoke that night, I heard them voices and I heard all that stuff, but what is the most powerful time when I hear your voice is when it comes from your heart. And I was watching the happiness video, and when you go into the school and you bring the kids out that have been bullied and you talk about their courage, and those words just flow out of you with such a level of compassion, such a level of understanding, for everything that you've done, your comedy, your voices, all your fame, I think that what you're going to be remembered for is a role model of a good human being. And your vision of what we could all be like if we just accepted each other more, respected each other more, and honored each other more. So I'm just very glad to have you on the call, and welcome.
Thank you very much, Dan. Appreciate it. I will tell you that the kids always inspire me. I remember I was in Franklin, New Hampshire, and a little kid said, fourth grader, and it just shocked me. You know, they always inspire me, but it's seldom that they shock you, that you're so overwhelmed. But one of them said, I refuse to bow down to bullies, and I refuse to be a slave to the fear that bullies bring.
Hmm. A fourth grader.
I looked over at the teacher. He just went, wow. And I said, wow. And sometimes when they say things, this is a fourth grade kid speaking to her entire school. And she was determined not to be bullied. And I think that empowering kids and letting them have voice and letting them find voice is really urgent. Even with our autistic kids, our kids who are Down syndrome, our kids who are Asperger, our kids who are challenged in some way, sometimes their pain, their vulnerability, bears such wisdom. There's a wonderful line by Aeschylus, with every drop of pain on the human heart, wisdom grows. And I see that happen with children when they get up and they get their opportunity to speak out.
Wow. Okay. Well, you've known our Evelyn for quite a while now.
We love our
and her sister Kim. Give us a couple of your observations on the two of them.
Well, I think the most powerful gift a human being can give is to give their life to be a person who love someone so much that you give them and you understand that when you give life, it boomerangs. When you give life to someone, your commitment of love to them, to keep them protected, nurtured, loved, respected, honored, even if it's just your full commitment to them, that honors you in such a way that it builds you up in the power of what I call spirit. And that's what I see with Evelyn and her sister, and her angel is her angel. I talked today, it made me laugh. I wrote a thing today about one of my kids who was Down syndrome, who said, if people like wine so much, why don't they try genuine? And I said, well, I was like, and I remember one of our kids played God in our play, Say Ray. Anna Maria Casella, and she was Down, and it reminds me of Angel, because when she, Ken and Evelyn are amazing symbiosis of loving sisterhood and unconditional loving care. And when we had a young girl, Anna Maria Casella, play God in our play, Say Ray, we asked if people would like to ask God a question, and it was in front of a huge audience. And they were all acting. And the girl said, she came out as God, and this lady in the back said, why do I ask for things and I never get them, God? And why do I pray for things? And when I wake up in the morning, they're not there. And there's this dead silence. And there was some harumping in the crowd. I'm like, going, why are you making this so serious? But Anna Maria playing God goes, I make the skies blue, I make the grass green. Some things you have to do on your own. And I went, I said to the crowd, I go, I actually do think that was God.
That's a great point.
Yes, and I said, they channel better for us what love is.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear this consistently, and I see it with Kim. We think that they have a chip missing. We're the ones with the chip missing.
Hello.
Yeah.
They have the love chip. They have the unconditional love chip, and we're in search of that in our tedious ways and our belabored efforts to try and increase our brain wattage to bring more to our life. we don't realize that it is that in sharing love like they do, in giving love and accepting love and hugging, that we benefit more than we could ever give them.
Exactly. And that was my point in letting people know that when I heard someone say, oh, that's so noble of you, or you're going to be blessed for it, and I wanted people to know how much I already am blessed. Yes, it does require a lot of work. It does require a lot of effort and some sacrifice. But because I can value the gift that she brings to my life, and I remember seeing a statement somewhere on Facebook or another social network that stated, I am, and it says a parent, you know, God gave me, and I said, my sister could handle my special needs. And I realized that that really is the case. I have special needs that only she can really touch because she has that depth of unconditional love. And growing up, I was always told that I was too sensitive, I was too tenderhearted, and, you know, with her, that's not the case. So we have actually another person. And I just want to say, Mike, thank you and Dan for writing your thoughts for my book, because I felt that for anyone who has compassion and that unconditional love and acceptance and recognizes it, that's what drew me to you 20-plus years ago. And from the moment that I met you, I've been watching you for days and months and years, and when I met you, it was like I didn't meet a stranger. You know, from day one, I just have these fun memories of us laughing and just cracking up, but having that genuine love. So I want to thank you for that. One of the other authors that we have on happens to also be named Evelyn, and we even share the same middle name. Isn't that amazing? So I want to give her an opportunity to say something, and so that we all can interact and share more of each other's stories. But I think both of your insights are just incredible, and we need more people like you, the two of you, to help the people like us, to help other people who don't understand to see the whole big picture.
So Evelyn D., are you on the line? Are you still there?
No, yes, I'm still here. I'm listening to you guys, and it's wonderful to hear it all.
You said that there was a little breakup. You said it was wonderful to hear. What is it?
Yes.
What is it that struck you about what we've been saying so far?
It was being a part of the writing of this has been was eye opening, and I reading through Evelyn, Miss Evelyn's book has been. It was great. It was enlightening to me to know that I'm not alone, and there's a lot of folks out there in the same situation. As I read through her book, it was everything. I was like, that's me, and that's what I went through, and I can totally relate. So it was, it's great to hear that, and hearing all this conversation, it just, I am on the right path, and there's been a lot of times I've doubted, did I do the right thing? Did I, have I made the right choices? And I know I really have, so... It's been wonderful hearing all of this right now.
When Evelyn first asked you, when Missy first asked you to be part of her book, did you immediately decide to do that? Was there some hesitation? How did you feel at that moment?
It was an immediate yes. One of the things I had been thinking about doing was to write a book. And so it was very serendipitous that all of a sudden she's asking about this. Like, perfect, yes, I want to share my story. So not even a doubt when she asks. That's so really good about it.
And now that it's in print and you see it out there, how has that affected your life?
Oh, a little nervous. It was a little, this is something you keep close to your heart and don't know how people will receive it and how people will feel about the story. But for those who've seen it and have shared it with family and friends, I've been pleasantly surprised that everybody has been very accepting, and we definitely have a different perspective and understand where I've come from and how I'm the person I am today. So still a little nervous because that's a lot of personal information, at least it seems to me. But like I said, reading the book and reading the stories of other special sibling relationships, it isn't that unusual, and it's worthy to share. So,
Missy, did you feel anything similar to that at all, or about when you wrote it and you put it out there, when you first put it out into the public?
Actually, in terms of my relationship with my sister, not, because I also been blogging. You know, during October, which is National Down Syndrome Month, I had blogged some of what I already knew was going to be a part of a book. But the part that I did have some hesitation about was sharing some of what my perception is of my mother's experience and, you know, giving birth to this child that wasn't planned and really kind of stepping in the shoes of what that might have been like for her. And so that part, our mother is no longer alive, so I wondered if she were alive, would she have been okay with me sharing certain aspects of that? And interestingly enough, a couple of relatives and old friends have actually given me some input as to what they knew, because I was only 11 years old, but they were older, and they knew some of what was going on with my mother. So that was really interesting. So I guess I'm probably more concerned about what older relatives or friends would say about me. They would say, you know, putting your business in the street. But I feel that it's so important when we are disclosing information to let people know that we are all human and we all have things that happen in life. And it's how you deal with them that makes the difference. I asked them on my personal Facebook page today, people who knew me growing up, what were some of their first memories or understanding or knowledge of my having my little sister, and how did they learn about her having a disability? And one of my childhood friends actually inboxed me to say that she remember asking her mother why Kim looked so different than I did. And her mother asked my mother. I wasn't even aware of this conversation until today. And it's like, wow. But I told her it was okay to put that on my page, because these are some of the things that people deal with on an everyday basis. And I want it to become an open conversation, because that which we hide tends to bring us more embarrassment, shame, and fear. And when we put light into it, it just makes us all grow. So that was, an interesting experience for me.
And I think you hit on to something both of you have, in that until we do that, until we're willing to be honest and go deeper, if we stay at this surface, we really don't bring any new awareness, because everybody can see, if they choose to look, what's on the surface. What we don't see is what's below the surface. And it really, for me, it was in different. It was in alcoholism, and it was in being molested as a child. Do I really want to talk about this? And it was the discovery on my part that until someone stepped forward to talk about it, no one would get a level of understanding. And there wasn't going to be anyone step forward until someone chose to be that someone. And I appreciate everyone that's in your book and everybody that's blogging for bringing this awareness to the rest of us, because we have no other any other way of gaining that knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I like to share that it's more wisdom, and what I call what we do is I think it's emotional archaeology.
Yeah. Hmm.
We go back and look at ourselves through the prism of our past. And it's really important for us to gather these stories and share them with each other. We are only as sick as the secrets we try to hold. And the best disinfectant is sunshine, the sunshine of spirit. And that means that if we share this pain, what I learned as a young medic in the military is pain shared is pain divided, but compassion shared is compassion multiplied. And so if we have the compassion for ourselves to look at our moms, our dads, our aunts, our uncles, our sisters, and I don't worry about what they think of me, because I worry more about the future than I do what people think of me in the past. And they can judge us. And like I tell kids, what people think of me is none of my business.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know my heart, and they don't know my journey.
Mm-hmm.
So the powerful gift is to bring sunlight into the room for all of us to understand how these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I see families live in such shame, I had an aunt, I loved her, but when my cousin had a Down syndrome child, she said, it's such a curse, they'll never be happy.
Oh.
And she was old school. And I said, you have no idea, Ann. This was my aunt. I said, you just have no idea. This wonderful blessing for her family was going to turn out, and he has. Her grandson is the most remarkable, kind, sweet, loving boy. And you have to confront that kind of theology. You have to, when people think like that, you must intervene, confront, and enlighten. Mm. And that the same applies for when we're talking about what our parents lived through with the journeys of having a special child. And not judging them, the line I always try to tell everybody is, if you judge people, you'll never have time to learn to love them.
Oh.
Mm.
Wow.
Mike, you said something that struck me when you said you have no idea. And I believe that people do have an idea, and that's all they have. They don't have facts. They don't have experience.
Right.
And they have an idea, but it's the wrong idea.
Right.
And so it's in a way, what we're talking about is that people are not just, if they were neutral, it would be okay. All we'd have to do is give them information. But their idea puts them way on the other side, and we got to work them all the way back to neutral so that they'll consider something different and then work from there. I think it's why it's so hard to turn people around.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to ask Evelyn, what were the issues that you had most difficulty putting out there that you were concerned about readers taking in a different way or judging?
I didn't catch all of that. Could you say it one more time, Ms. Evelyn? I apologize.
Okay. I was saying, when you said there were certain things you had hesitations about people reading, you know, and possibly even judging, what was it that was most, that you had the greatest concern about?
I think, you know, it's funny that something that Michael mentioned earlier about feeling shame, I've never been ashamed of her. And so I guess the biggest concern that I had was sharing that, because as I was growing up, all of the things were, we hid Gina. My parents were the ones who were ashamed. And so what I felt like, I don't know if it was me personally afraid of that.
Okay, I'm having a difficulty understanding, so I want to make sure this is clear when it comes out in the recording. Is everybody else hearing clearly?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I can hear clearly, yeah. And there's a tiny little breakup once in a while, but I can hear pretty clear.
Okay.
I'm making sure my hands are off here. It wasn't so much, it was just a personal story that I haven't shared really with anyone. I have no problem going out with her and taking her places. But it was like there's so much personal stuff, like how my parents reacted, and I think it's similar to yours, Ms. Evelyn, about how your mom was and how my parents are now and how they don't communicate and they're not open to having any discussion. So I think that was the hardest part of sharing, and that getting back to them, I guess. And I've tried to talk to them about it, but my parents are not the type that are open to that. We've never had deep discussions. So that's the part that was the most difficult, I guess. And it felt personal that the story I'm telling has not really been told at that level.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was a common thread throughout the varying authors, is that the parents were sort of mom about it. They did not talk, and it was almost like, you know, as we talk about with addiction, the elephant in the living room. Everyone know, but no one talks about what's going to happen or how we're going to handle this. And I was just really surprised at how many siblings who are now caregivers, primary caregivers, say that there was never any discussion about what was going to happen if the parents were to pass. And so I thought that was just really interesting. And if anything can come out of the book, in addition, is for new parents of children who have developmental disabilities to be open about what their expectations are, because I also realized that, unlike myself, there were some siblings who did not embrace the thought of having to take care of their siblings. Mine, it was just a given. It was the opposite, because I was offended when my mother made the comment that she didn't know what was going to happen to Kim when she was no longer alive. I was seriously hurt and upset. It's like, what do you mean? You know, I've always known that I would be taking care of her. And that was like, Dan, when you said in the introduction that, you know, when you adopted me as a sister, you knew that it was a two-package deal. Anyone in my life has always known that it's a two-package deal. And now, 3, 4, and 5 with the animals.
I love you, Evelyn. I love that you even, I love that you're so filled with spiritual definition and affirmation. I years ago, I have to say, I did outreach work, and I went out to a family who had sequestered their Down syndrome young person in the home, and I insisted that they let me bring them to the party, the Christmas party. And they were afraid they'd get hurt, and they were afraid they'd be ridiculed. They were afraid they'd be embarrassed. They were afraid of everything. And I told them, fear is the little dark room where negatives are developed. When we went to the Christmas party, this little guy who was 22 and Downs had a voice that it just... It came from an angelic place. And I got him to sing Jingle Bells in front of everybody in such a sweet and empathic way that his sister, who came with me, who was 17, fell completely apart because she'd never heard him sing. And he sang with such depth of soul and integrity by himself, first time, and he wasn't afraid.
Wow.
And it was like he had waited all that time to be introduced to sing the song. And it was a Christmas moment that will live forever in my memory, because he had on a little bow tie that his mother got him. And then he stood on the steps and he began to sing it. My jaw dropped. I was like, I looked around like, wait a minute, thank you, really. You know, he goes, I would like to sing happy. I would like to sing this you know, song. And so, you know, he began to sing We Wish You a Merry Christmas. He sang Jingle Bells. And both, it overwhelmed with, and they gave him huge applause.
That's the other thing that I want people to look beyond their disability and find a gift. You know, and I think one of the most wonderful things that I hadn't even been aware of was Kim's ability to dance. And hopefully I'll have part of the video posted on Facebook for anyone who's listening. Her dancing just gives people goose pimples. It's talk about being angelic. It's just awesome. Mm-hmm. That's where I think the name, the angel, came from. And she was already 35, the first time I ever saw her do that. And it's like, oh, my gosh, who would have imagined there's such a gift? And that, she just loves it. It gives her sense of, I would say, purpose. And we realize that each person, each soul that comes here has a purpose, and we have to look for it. And
what did you learn about yourself at that moment?
Pardon me?
What did you learn about yourself at that moment when you watched her dance and it overwhelmed you?
That I can't dance. That she's a better dancer than I am. there was to see, and that there was more to to uncover, and more to discover, and that she has a place that's solely hers, without being, you know, Evelyn's sister, without being the special person. She has her own gift, and everyone who's ever seen her, even with her day program, because it started off with her doing praise dance at our church by another special needs sibling who was over the praise dance team and allowed Kim to dance by herself. And I laughed when I said that she's a better dancer than me, because I wasn't even allowed to be on the dance team.
Wow.
But when she did do that, and when the day program saw her, even they said they got goosebumps. And so she hasn't been dancing in a while, and probably about a year ago, I went for the talent show, and she danced, and I could not stop crying. It was just so amazing. And even with her little stopping and doing her little thing in the middle, you know, her little rituals, it was funny, but it was just still so awesome, so awesome.
It took you know, Evelyn, when you were talking about that, at her birthday party, when I saw her dance, I felt the same way. I had never seen anybody really just, it was like the music and her were one. And the impression that I got is that she would have danced exactly the same if she was in her room by herself, or if 10 million people were watching.
Exactly. That is the freedom that comes with that. What's really amazing to me is the unconditional love that extends even to themselves, and their ability to be self-effacing, and their ability to laugh at the moments. And one of my favorite stories I tell, I told on PBS on my first show called The Power of Choice. We got a young person a job at a McDonald's, and they were standing there, and these kids came in and were teasing and being ruthlessly cruel. And our young person, who was developmentally delayed, got their change, counted everything out perfect, and as they walked, they said, "Hey, you did everything right, unbelievable." And as soon as they cleared the door, because we couldn't, I was so angry. Because I was so angry that people treated him that way. But as soon as they cleared the door, he looked at us and he said, "Well, simple things amuse simple people." Everybody there to audit them working lost it. And I said, "You can't, come on." And what I try to tell everybody is, just the ability to understand that people are ruthless and cruel and mean, and forgive them anyway, move on with your day.
You know, like, you the aha on them.
Exactly. You know, that's the name of a great book, The Ha-Ha's on You.
You know, Mike, I think you really hit the essence of something when you said that their ability to love, including themselves. And it made me think about my life. And what I thought first was, they're in a position that they can say, "I love myself so much I can share some with you." And those of us that are out pursuing happiness, pursuing goals, pursuing all of these things that society created, I think if we look at when we are not feeling loving toward others, the core of that started with our inability to love ourselves. And what we're doing is we're on a love diet, and we're holding it for ourselves, and we're not willing to give it to others.
Well,
and they don't have that experience.
Love diet, No, you're dead on it. That's it. That's exactly what it is. And
you,
I love that,
you know,
line.
Evelyn,
I had a kid, I have to tell you, I said, do you think you're too hard on yourself? And he goes, "Well, I am, but I try not to take it personally."
You know, Evelyn, Evelyn, something that struck me with your book, and I have tags on your book, but this is the first one I put in here. You know your book's all marked up. That's the way I read, was when you talk about the Easter Seal Society got Mutual Life Insurance Company, Mass Mutual, to do a survey. And the finding that they had struck me. And I'll read it out of your book. The survey indicated that among adult siblings of those with developmental disabilities, about half of the adult siblings were either already or planning to become the primary caregiver of their brother or sister. And what struck me about that was, I have no idea what the number was, but that seems like it's higher than people are willing to jump up and say, I'll take care of my parents when they get older.
Oh.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
And then it says more than half said that having a sibling with a disability had a positive impact on their quality of life. And I think that's what we've been talking about here. We've been talking about, you know, the pace is different. Maybe it's a little slower. But you know what? Maybe we're too fast.
Hello.
Maybe we're the ones with the disabilities. Because we don't have what they have.
Because anyone who knows Kim knows that she gets in a hurry for nothing. And that has been my greatest challenge with her. Because sometimes it appears that she's in suspended motion. And I'm like, come on, Kim, come on. And people tell me, oh, you're so patient with her. And I feel like I'm almost jumping out of my skin.
There's a great line I think you guys would love by a young student from Chad who lived with us in the city. He said, sometimes, Mike, you have to slow down and let your soul catch up to you.
And that is the truth. And I believe that's one of my lessons in life, because you know how I get on a roll and...
And
she'll say, oh, Evelyn...
Yeah, that's when you know.
I want to ask the other Evelyn, because I think to some extent our experiences with our siblings might have a difference when we talk about the difference in the nature of their disability. I'm interested in hearing a little bit more from Evelyn DeMarco about what is Gina's disability and what is your way that you find that you connect with her the most in terms of how that impacts your interaction.
Okay. So she doesn't have Down syndrome. And actually, it's a mission of mine to exactly get the entire history of her disability. But what I do know is she actually has a portion of her brain missing. So her interactions are very abrupt. She can swing from... She's happy and singing, and all of a sudden she's throwing a tantrum. So she swings and is taking medication to help with that. So I worry at times that that's kind of on eggshells and how to interact. But she has these OCD-type behaviors where she focuses on, she loves newspaper. Specifically, I don't know why, Big Five ads. She loves them. But only, I know. She points out and says, dollar? I go, I wish it was just a dollar. But she also uses it almost to hide herself. So we're working on having that not be in her face, and so we have more eye contact. And her verbal level, it's more of really of a 3-year-old of when she wants to go to the car, she'll say, car me, or she'll say, she wants to put on her slippers, she'll say, slipper me. So the interaction is at that level, but your question about how do you connect, it's she'll all of a sudden come up and just hug the stuffing out of me, and she'll pet my hair and she'll say, sister. And at those moments, and then she likes singing, she's very repetitive, she'll make a motion, she wants you to do the same thing. And she also sings a lot. We used to sing a lot of kids' songs, you know, like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, her ABCs. And she just smiles and booms. But instead of arguing with her, like my parents would try to get her to shut up and be quiet, she's now in a position, and she lives in a place, and we interact to let her just do what she wants to do.
Mm-hmm,
of course, within
mm-hmm.
reason, she has to learn her boundaries. But she's the happiest she's been. skin is good, her eyes are bright, and she, the whole thing with the newspaper, she's more likely now to not have it in her face, but and she's sitting there next to you and holding your hand and wanting you to sing and play with her. So that's the level, and that's how I know. When I see that and she hugs me and just, you can, I know that that person that's there is loving me right back. I mean, you can just feel the love, and it's just, I don't know how to explain it, but it's amazing.
Do both of you feel like your sisters are really in tune to your emotions and your needs?
I will say for me, definitely. Definitely. I can even be feeling a certain way inside, but trying to, you know, be cool on the outside, and she'll look at me, especially this happens in the mornings because I'm not a real morning person anyway, but she'll look at me and she'll say, be happy. And it could be something going on with me and I'm not even aware, and tears will start rolling because it's almost like she's saying, you know, like the song, don't worry, be happy. It's like, I know how you're feeling. That has been really amazing to me. Or I can be really quiet, and she might say something that has to do with something I was thinking, and I'm looking at her like, how did you figure that out? And I think one of the stories that I share in the book that I maybe kind of hesitated because part of it was embarrassing for a moment, and I think the day after, this was like during a time that I was going through a depression just recently, and I think I talked to you that same day, Mike. But it was my birthday, and I was just really emotionally vulnerable and in a real sad state. And I, you know, spent it alone and came home and took a call from my cousin, Evelyn. And I thought I was going to be able to, you know, hold up to the phone conversation, and I started crying. And Kim, everyone knows her, knows how much she loves her food. So you don't stop her food for anything. But she was eating cake, and she looked at me. She put the cake down and brought me a Kleenex. She went and sat back down, and I just kept crying and crying. So finally she put everything down, and she walked towards me with her arms out, and just she didn't say a word. She just held me and patted me on the back, and I just bawled like a baby. I bawled like a baby in her chest. And it was like, oh, my gosh. And that's, she just held me. And when I finished, she said, you okay? And I said, yeah. She went back and finished eating her cake.
I love that story.
But it was
You're
amazing.
Important, but it is cake.
Yeah, right. I think that's go ahead.
Evelyn D., do you sense similar to in your relationship with your sister?
I think so. There's times when I get really quiet and I'm with her, and she'll just come up and she'll put her arms around me. So I think she does definitely pick up on how I'm feeling and gets an idea. Of course, she's also, it's about her, so she really has her things going on. But there are times, though, that she surprises me. She'll take my hand or pet my head or pat my head and say, sister. And it just, yeah, she knows.
Isn't that the most wonderful thing to hear that sister come out of their mouth? I love my sister. Oh, my gosh. And I remember when I was away in college, and I would call her, and my mother said, you guys must be really connected, she said, because she was just talking about you. And that happened more often than not. I would call. And my mother would say, she said the words just came out of her mouth. So, yeah, I think there's definitely an interconnection going on there.
And I sense that, too. I mean, watching you and Kim together, and that coupled with what you said earlier, Mike, about, you know, unconditional love, not being judgmental, not holding and harboring anger, although, you know, all of that, just I just envy that ability to just act on what you feel at the moment. When you want to hug somebody, you hug them. When you want to, you know, hold their hand, you hold their hand. That's the part that where I think, especially Kim, since I know her so well, she has it all over me. Truly, because there will be times when I'll want to do something and I'll, you know, my brain starts playing that stupid projecting game back and forth, and it's really nonsense.
When we took our group of Special Olympics athletes to San Quentin, we sent them on hug attacks. And if you want to watch melted fear melting into amazing love, it's get a bunch of raw-boned big basketball hoop players from San Quentin getting hugged by Special Olympics. And we went back over, and one of them, Michael, said, he goes, "I think they're afraid of us."
Uh-oh.
And I said, why do you think that? He goes, "We're taller than they thought we'd be."
And you know what's so neat about that, Dad, you said, when they say things, it's like they're not trying to be sarcastic. They're not trying to be, they're just speaking the truth. It's just the fact as they see them. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That was the best part of it. You know, it was Michael Rice who said it, and I started to laugh because he's this wonderful developmentally delayed guy, and when he said it, we were thinking completely different.
Mm-hmm.
We were thinking that you thought they were kind of standoffish to you because you were different. And he was like going the other way.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're taller than they thought we'd be.
Yeah.
but Mike, you know, there's potentially very powerful insight. They may have picked that. Maybe there was fear. And the fear was that these kids have something that I can't get, and I'm not sure I want to let myself experience a little bit of this, and I don't know what it's going to do to me. It had nothing to do, but they picked up on it. They just explained it their way.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you know what's interesting, Dan? At the end of the game, after they played us for so long, they were now pulling the ball off the hoop and handing it to them to shoot.
Wow.
Even at their own basket. Mm. And that was a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell everybody, you don't quit 1 minute before the miracle happens.
Mm.
No.
Wow.
Right. And you don't, and you know, to some extent, what happened that day, maybe still hasn't happened yet. It was a seed planted in some of them that will germinate somewhere else.
You bet. No, that's great insight, Dan. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Once I believe you open, you know, the line is, if you open the door, sunlight will come in.
Mm. And that's what we want to do. We want to let the sunlight in, and I believe that our society as a whole can benefit greatly from having the relationship with our special needs siblings. And one of our authors is actually not the biological sibling, but he's taken on the role as a big brother and has been in this young man's life for 29 years. And I think the things that we learn from them can be taken out into the world, and it just makes life a lot more simple but real. And I think that's when we talk about, you know, getting to the core, getting to the heart. But I believe it or not, our time is actually up, but I do want to cover the halo off part, because we're talking about this like it's all fun and roses and dandy, and I think there might be some people who are having difficulties who are probably maybe feeling guilty that they might have some negative feelings about their interactions with, or the responsibility, or may even perceive it as a burden in taking care of their siblings or being involved. And I just want to address that a little bit, too, if I can do so, Mr. Host.
Sure.
I guess it's the section called Halo Off Days. Because even though she's my angel, she has those days where it's like, okay, from which angel tree did you fall from? And so you were saying that they're uninhibited about showing the love, but I think also uninhibited about standing their ground and being stubborn about the things that they just don't want to be part of as well, which can be very, very trying. And I think we have to sort of step out the box. I know for me, I have to step out the box and stand back and look at the big picture and, one, find the humor sometimes And other times I stand back and look at and find what I can give gratitude for, because one of the things is, you know, Kim wants things her way. She could be very demanding. And when I'm starting to feel unappreciated or really tried or just really frustrated, I think about there are some people who don't even have the ability to express that. I look at our rescue provider, Elion, cares for all levels of care of special needs adults and children. And I think about those who cannot express their preference for one food or another, or who can't even chew their food, can't feed themselves or stomach that. And I stand back and say, well, you know, at least, you know, I'm grateful that she knows the difference. At least she can ask. You know, at least I have the ability to accommodate her request if I choose to or not. And that's one of my ways of dealing, but those are the really the tough ones today. So you don't have a lot of energy physically or emotionally or mentally. Even when I make my acknowledgments in the first book, I thanked her for accepting whatever I gave her for dinner on the days that I was busy trying to finish my book and didn't have time to cook the meal that she wanted, because she can walk up to a plate and look at it and suck her teeth and roll her eyes and walk away. And it's like, you little ungrateful little imp, you.
Yeah, well, you have to. That's all so human. Every bit of that, that's called relationship.
Yeah.
That's right. And we have to have that heartfelt relationship. And, you know, we accept the fact that we're never going to please everybody all the time. And that, and what I try to tell everybody is allowing everybody to be human. And that's part of humanity. It is, you know, I'm going to fail you at times, and you're going to fail me at times, but we're going to, you know, we're going to just keep this relationship, this partnership, this friendship going, and that's the ships we sail on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's
you know, Evelyn,
I
was
don't
thinking,
like you, and you don't like me, but the love is always there.
Right. There you go. Perfectly said. Perfectly said.
I was going to say that if you were to ask my wife and let her think long enough, she could think of at least one time when I was in her presence without my halo. So it's kind of I think it's normal, but
yeah.
I think that, you know, one of the things that it struck me as you were saying that, and I'd like to talk for just a little bit about this, is that the support that's out there, and as people are listening to this and they're thinking, you know, maybe there is something I can do. The question is, where do I start? So between all of you, where do we start?
I want to give Evelyn an opportunity to speak as well. I also want to hear about your halo off days, too. But I think, for one, spending time with the people who have come to know Kim and to be able to, because very few people have offered to take her after I can have some time to myself. People love her and like her, but they generally are not comfortable enough because they haven't spent enough time around us to really know her. I think people still have a certain amount of fear that they might not measure up. And my joke, you know, when my friend Val passed, it was like, okay, Val and my mother passed in the same month, like less than 2 weeks apart, and that was all of my personal support. And Val said, girl, give her a bowl of food, and you won't have to worry about anything. That'll take up like 2 hours right there, you know. And that was the joke, but it's really, she knew her well enough to know, if I give her something to eat, I won't have to have as much to worry about. And I think people worry about not being able to understand her speech, her communication. But I think one, spending time with, but the other is respite care. Having some time. I mean, I say the same thing about, you know, when I was doing foster care and, you know, raising my adopted son. We all just need some time out. And if people are just willing to step up to the bat to say, you know, here, go take a few hours off, you know, go overnight and I'll sleep. And I've had one friend, Cheryl, bless her heart, who would leave comfort of her own home and come sleep here with my circus of animals and my sister just so I could go to her overnight. That was a huge relief that I don't get often. And I think for someone to feel comfortable in doing that, it means, like, we need to do it with one another. Spend some time getting to know one another. There are agencies where you can get paid to be respite care providers and in-home support service providers. So I think that probably would be my greatest request and recommendation for anyone, is to just get to know the family, sign up, whether it's officially or not, just to give us some time out. Or even just to bear with us. For me, sometimes, and you know, Dan, that getting somewhere and getting her from the car to whatever the venue is can be a hassle. But even having someone to go with us just takes some of the burden off of me. You know, it's like, okay, take some of the, and I won't even say burden, just some of the tension or the stress, because sometimes she'll listen to someone better than she'll listen to me. And so if I'm not preoccupied out, you know, with trying to get her to do something, I'm more, you know, at rest, at peace, and relaxed. And that helps a lot for someone just to hang out with us, because it is just the two of us.
Yeah. I just want to add to this, is that what you're saying, Ms. Ellen, is completely right. Because I think for my mom and my dad, because they were so hidden about her, they didn't reach out for help. And there was a lot of, in the Solano County area, there was so much support. Bay Regional Center has so much support there. And because they were afraid to talk to anybody about it and willing to accept help, they got very angry. And they were like, there are certain situations that put my sister in harm's way from a health perspective because they didn't reach out and they got really set in their ways. And to get that word out, it's okay to ask for help. That's the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't you do all by yourself. And you're right, too, that it's hard to find someone who's willing to volunteer because people are also afraid they're going to let you down.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, I have to say something that is powerful, and that's this, that I admire the two of you so much and the love you have and the compassion that you feel towards yourselves as you've done what you should do. And I think there's this wonderful line that teaches us that love is family and family is love. And I always tell everybody the greatest form of Social Security that I ever had was all the love I put out to all the children and my own that I took in.
Mm.
And it comes back as a harvest. I'm in my mid-60s now, and I get so much love from all the kids who I helped out and nurtured. And I remember this line that we have to reach out when we're overwhelmed, and this is where we should begin and start. When a 14-year-old said, I said, can you talk about and describe, because he was an artist, your depression? And he said, yeah, depression's when you're encapsulated in a large glass globe and you can't reach out and touch anyone, and no one can reach in and touch you. And unless your heart and spirit shatter the globe from the inside, or you allow a family member or a friend to shatter it from the outside, you could remain entombed, unable to touch and feel, but gone up against the glass numb. And what I know is this, that is absolutely the best description of depression.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who's a caretaker, a care provider, a restive care, a palliative care, a person who, like I do, work in hospice, you're going to get compassion fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
So the person you must love the most in order to renew is you. And you can't be so much, you know, you can't be so much giving so much out that there's nothing there for you.
Yeah.
And that's the key. And allow yourself to be angry. Allow yourself to be irritated. Allow yourself to feel embittered at times and know that it's all part of it. But then when you sometimes just take a moment to meditate in gratitude, you say to yourself, what a great life lesson.
Indeed. Wow.
Well, Mike, those young kids have taught you well.
Did you hear that, Mike?
No.
I said those young kids have taught you well.
Well, you want to know my favorite line from a little kid? I was doing all this clowning around, and he kept asking me a question. He was 5. And I says, well, what did you want to ask? He goes, it's rather personal. She was like five. I go, okay, what's your personal question? He goes, were you quite a bit of a problem for your mother when you were growing up?
I missed that one. Did you do what?
He said, were you quite a bit of a problem for your mother when you were growing up? He's like five. I can't.
Oh, my goodness. That's hilarious. Yeah, that reminds me of a conversation that we had in the hotel lobby one day about you having ADD. But share the story about when you took the kids to the Giants game, the special needs.
Oh, well, we were walking into the Giants game, and we as we're walking in, you know, I'm 6'6" and 300 pounds, and I'm walking in. There was this curmudgeon-y guy at the turnstile, and we walk in, and we're there. There's three high-functioning kids, three low-functioning kids, and I got them chewing in, holding onto my belt buckle as we go through. And we get through, and this curmudgeon-y guy goes, he yells, like really indignantly, hey, hey, none of you people move until I find out who's in charge of your group. And one of the kids goes, Mike, he thinks you're retarded too.
I love it. I love it.
Did you thank him for the compliment?
You know what? It was the highest form of loving flattery I could get. You're one of us.
Yeah.
He thinks
right.
You're one of us. You can't get a higher compliment to love than that.
That's it. That is it. I'm loving it. And even though some people take offense to the word retarded, I tell people retarded really only means slow. But we have misconstrued the connotation of it so much. However, I do tell one little joke in the book, and I apologize before I said using that word because people might take offense. But I said, you know, it's just being real of what you think. So but I'll leave it for everyone else to read in the book.
Yeah.
So that's more than probably we can even share at this time. Not us, really, but probably more than people can listen to it one time. So we'll save some for another.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, it was my honor to be on the show. And thank you, Dan. Thank you all very much. Evelyn, I love you guys very much. This was a great night for me.
Love you, too, so much. And
thank you, Mike. It was great hearing you.
Thanks, Doc. Thank you. New godson.
Oh, Adam Gatlin, the sweetest little guy. Oh, my gosh. He is the best little boy. And his father has a website called I Am Not Sorry.
Okay. We will look that up.
Yeah, when he was, we do a thing called Special Affects. It's a web page that where we help folks with special needs and their families.
Wow. Well, include him on that. And I just want to say before we end this call that the book is published under Heartfelt Publications, which is a subsidiary of Four Child Heart Incorporated, my nonprofit, which provides counseling and support services for foster youth. And one of the things that I want to do as a part of this book is reach out to foster siblings who have been separated primarily because of one of the siblings having a developmental disability. I also fostered a sibling pair in which one of them had Down syndrome, and they reminded me so much of myself, and now they both are adults. They were adopted by a family, and I am in touch primarily with the older daughter. But when I look at that, and I don't know if people listened to the NBC news last night, that there's a program that started here in California, but that is spread about called Camp to Belong, in which siblings, that's one time a year, they get to really spend time, to spend a week with one another. And I want to make sure that those who have siblings with disabilities are able to foster their connections and their relationships with their siblings, because I could never imagine being separated from my kin. So that's something I really want to promote, and hopefully that you and those who are listening can support us in doing that, because everything in my life really has purpose and connection, and to me it's just another place to merge the loves of my life together, my angels, my heart, which I call most of my current, former, and transitioning foster youth. So my heart and my angels, I believe we can all work together to, as you say, bring in sunshine and to warm their hearts. So I look forward to your support in that. And our website is www.forachildsheart.org. You can find us on Facebook under the same name. You can also order the book from www.hearttalkpublications.com. And my personal website is talktomse.com, talktomse.com. So thank you. And Mike and Dan, and I almost called you Gina, Evelyn. If you have contact information that you would like for people to connect with you, please share it. No one? Well, Dan is also one of the authors of a Hard Talk publication book, so please share your book, Mr.
Yeah,
Dan.
Yeah, my book is The Secret Path to Wisdom. It's a co-authored book. Once you buy it, you co-author it, because what I do is, my goal is to stimulate thought, to stimulate you to go inside of yourself and to pull things out and to fill in the blanks. And the book is full of a lot of blanks after a lot of my story. My website is forevertold.com, FOVERTOLD.com, Forever Told. I make video biographies of ordinary people's lives, because there's no such thing as an ordinary person.
Ah, it's great.
Cool. And, of course, Mike, we can find you at MichaelPritchard.com.
Yeah, MichaelPritchard.com, and The Happy Movie on the web. You can pick it up at Netflix or iTunes, and it's a movie about happiness, and it's wonderful.
Yes. And
watch it with kids and tissues.
Yes.
It'll be
and
a good
Evelyn,
cry, not a bad one. It's a good one.
Yes. And Evelyn, would you like to leave information for if anyone wants to contact you for more information about sharing your story?
Oh, definitely. If anybody wants to email and see, talk about it, I'd be willing to share my story and give you some insights about what I've learned, and sometimes just to talk about it. It's evelyn.demarco@sbcglobal.net.
Okay, so evelyn.demarco is D-I-M-A-R-C-O,
yes.
Correct? At sbcglobal.net.
Yes.
All right. Well, I want to say thank you to Dan for being our host, Mr. Dan Smith, and I thank you, Michael and Evelyn.
I love you all.
And
you
thank you for allowing me to be a guest as well. So allow me to tell my story. Any closing thoughts, Dan?
I just thoroughly enjoyed tonight, and as you said, there could be a whole other program. I had to bite my tongue at the end when you were talking about foster youth with special needs, and I was thinking about, you know, how much consistency and stability plays a role in the lives of special needs children. So I look forward to doing more of this. I am so grateful to be your friend. The whole world is so blessed that you were born and that you were set on this path, as bumpy as it has been for you, as wide as the caverns you had to jump over have been, as high as the mountains have been that you've had to climb, because you've always kept the goodwill of others in your heart. And I'm so blessed to know you, and we're all so blessed to be part of the world that you're creating. Thank you, Miss E.
Thank you all. God bless.
Night. Good night. God bless you guys.
Good night.
Thank you, guys.
heavenly mother's crying. See the children are dying at the hands of the other child. I know her heart is breaking. I feel the earth is shaking. That river's flowing.